It's time for another episode of Spies, Lies, and Private Eyes. Here's your host, Terrence McCauley.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Spies, Lies, and Private Eyes right here on the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network. My guest today is Jeff Circle. He is a former counterintelligence professional, police officer, federal investigator. He is also the author of the Silo Thriller series and the mind behind the Writer Dossier features that everyone has seen on social media and a lot of other places. Jeff, thanks so much for being here tonight.
Hey, thanks, Terrence. I appreciate it.
Oh, no problem at all. Now, I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit about the Silo Thriller series that you've written.
Oh, absolutely. Okay, so SILO, it stands for Special Intelligence Logistics and Operations. And I got the idea years ago. I was in Afghanistan and I walked up to this friend of mine who I was working with and I said, hey, did you hear about the special spy agency that Kennedy started right before he was assassinated? And he's like, no. And it's like, yeah, it's called SILOs. You know, he was mad at the CIA and everything after everything that had gone down with the Bay of Pigs. And he started his own, you know, him and Bobby. And, it was a charter. The idea was, you know, he'd have a dedicated group of people who were loyal to him, give him the intelligence he needed. And he started it up and it kind of went from there. So SILO, the what I wanted to do with it was create. And it's not really a spy agency because it's not an espionage novel per se. It's more of a presidential, task force or mission team that was set up back before Kennedy was assassinated. But it lived on because all of a sudden he was gone and it was already started. So it was up to the people in charge to keep it alive. And so they chose to do that. And I got the idea from my job working in counterintelligence of everything is so compartmentalized in intelligence, right. And everybody knows. And so there a lot of times the right hand doesn't know what the left hand's doing. And so I just kind of spun that into, well, what if an organization didn't have government oversight anymore? And so what would we need? We would need special intelligence. Got it. Logistics. Absolutely. You've got to move things and get things in place. And then operations, someone's got to be, operate. All of put it all together, but they're going to operate in silos because they can't get caught. Because this can't get this can't be discovered that this even thing exists. And so it just kind of went from there. So book one, my protagonist is this female named Alex Watson, and she works with a Navy SEAL who's office bound temporarily. He's working at a headquarters where Watson is, and. The two of them go off on some crazy missions. And the whole concept of is how do we get the information we need if we're not a legitimate sanctioned agency? Well, this is what we do. We get people who see things the same way we do ideologically, and wherever they are, whether they work in the NSA or the DIA or the IRS or Homeland Security, we recruit from there. And so that's where we get all our information. And so it's just kind of cool. So they're in silos and, it's a pyramid, kind of goes up to the top. And there are three people who run the thing. You know, there's the intel guy, the logistics guy, and the operations guy. So that's SILO. I'm working on book two. It's edited. Both books are edited actually. We're moving along and I've got ideas on book three. I've already got a draft on that. But it's just so much fun coming up with these ideas for stories based on things I've seen and places I've been around the world.
I can imagine. Yeah, it's funny. I love that idea because my university series was set very much on that same premise. And I had it as Eisenhower set it up as his last act in office to combat what he called the military-industrial complex.
Yes.
And so a lot of people came out of the woodwork saying, oh, that's ridiculous. That would never happen. There was nothing ever like that. You're just being ridiculous. It's too much to be believed. And I said, well, Kennedy actually did it. Oh, stop. I don't want to hear it. Now you're going to get into the grassy knoll nonsense. I said, no, he did. And he was going to do a second Cuban invasion. No, that's ridiculous. They wouldn't do anything like that. And sure enough, you're absolutely right. And I'm glad finally an intelligence professional like yourself has backed me up on that. Yeah, because they did have their own stuff. They cleared out the entire, they cleared out Dulles and a lot of the other people who were responsible for the Bay of Pigs, but they didn't give up on the idea. They just wanted to do it their way.
Yep. You know, and I think Brad Taylor has done something pretty similar. There's this one point in one of his books, I think it's Daughter of War, where, you know, Pike Logan's in the White House and he's in the Oval Office, and someone walks over to a corner of the Oval Office and peels back some of the carpet, and, you know, here's the original charter. You know, we're legal, we're legit. But you can't help it. Yeah, really, really cool stuff. I remember reading that. I was just like blown away. I'm like, this is what I
Yeah, it's so cool. And especially when you have an idea that's rooted in actual fact, it really helps the creative juices flow.
Well, that's the beauty of what we do as writers, is take something that's plausible. And if it's rooted, that's even better. And that's kind of where my ideas for the storyline for book one of Silo came from, was all of these intelligence reports that I'm reading and all of the open source stuff that I was reading, because we had to keep an eye on exactly what was going on culturally in Germany and in Italy and in Afghanistan when I was in those places, of what was happening on the ground right then. And a lot of it was open source.
Right.
And so you take that and like, well, what if? Layer that on top of something else, and then put in some creative license, and you're off to the races.
Right, right. And I think the best books that are the most successful are the ones that blend a really intricate plot and also a certain amount of action too. And that's something that the Clancy novels seem to get away from as his career and popularity took off. It became a lot more centered on the tech and a lot of three-letter agencies and a lot of acronyms, rather than dedicating themselves necessarily to the story.
Mm-hmm. No, you're exactly right. And that's something that I know our friend Brad Thor really harps on, is faction. He kind of coined that phrase. And I remember when I saw him last year in San Diego, we had talked about his Rising Tiger book, and no one's talking about India. And everything that's going on over there. And one of the main characters in that book, Rising Tiger, was this Indian investigator. And they call it FSNI, as Foreign Service National Investigator. I hired FSNIs when I was in Afghanistan. They're local national, you know, former cops or you know, investigators. And you hire them to work out of the embassy. And so I went up to Brad. I'm like, dude, you nailed it, because you took something real that no one even knows about, but sounds plausible, and turns out it is. And you wrote a really good book about it. So yeah, you're exactly right with the faction. People are looking for, and I keep hearing this over and over from all of the agents and editors I talk to, they're looking for something that's different but familiar. Mm-hmm. And that's right. That's our job, to put those two things together.
Right, exactly right. And there is a lot of stuff out there. You don't necessarily have to have security clearance in order to find some really interesting stuff. Like, I found out about the Indian intelligence agencies as well, and I put one of those characters in my university series, because they do some really cool stuff. And I was at BoucherCon several years ago, and someone said, it was in the intelligence organization, said, how did you find that out about them? Because they do some really cool stuff. And I said, it's all out there. I just decided to take something that the reader might not know about and include it in the book. And it gave it a whole new dimension. He said, yeah, India is the quiet riot nobody talks about, but they do an awful lot behind the scenes, and they're very capable.
Absolutely. I got to know, there's a security organization which readers, writers, they all have access to. In the United States, it's called, people call it ASIS or ASIS, A-S-I-S. It's a professional security organization you can join, belong to, and they produce a magazine. And I was in Montreux, Switzerland at a conference, and I ended up talking to the editor for the Indian edition of Security Today. And we just got to talking, and I said, hey, this is really interesting. I'd like to know more about what you do. And I offered to start writing some security articles for him. He published four of them in his magazine. And so my little line with that is, Yeah, I write for Security Today in India. Oh, there's only a billion people read it, so it's kind of No, you're right though. India, it's definitely, we don't hear a lot about it, but it's a huge big player. And Brad nailed it, putting them in his series. That was real brilliant.
Right. And it's also good to pay attention to not just the large players on the world stage like Russia and what's happening in the Ukraine. Yeah. There are a lot of other areas in the same geosphere that are interesting, like Vietnam, for example. I didn't realize until I started doing research on it that we've made a lot of inroads, even though they're still a communist country. They're not too happy with Russia right now, and they've kind of been leaning toward the United States, of all people, because we treat them a little more fairly than the Russians do.
The enemy of my enemy philosophy. I think the State Department or somebody smart, maybe not them, but someone smart. So you're looking at the geopolitical landscape and saying, hey, you know, maybe we should open up some trade with this company, this country, and that. And when you talk about big companies like Apple and all these others who have so much manufacturing in China, they want to start pulling away from some of the medical manufacturing, so the medicine that we get from China. They're looking at other places. Vietnam, other, you know, other countries over there to, hey, let's right. put some in. And we probably do need to spread things out a little bit.
We do. But
yeah. Vietnam, things you don't hear about. A lot of countries out there, a bunch of them, 53 countries in Africa. So,
yeah. Yeah. People just say, think of Africa and they think of just the continent, but there's, you're right. 53 different countries, all of them with competing interests, some better than others. And yeah, it's definitely a hotbed, and it's all out there. You just have to keep an eye open for it and do research. It's the same thing like with technology too. When I did the university series, this is, I think the university series has been out 7-8 years now. And I had the protagonist have a cell phone that he used his thumbprint and his facial ID to access some of the more hidden features on the handheld. I had people who were engineers tell me that's ridiculous. That will never happen. The thing would have to be the size of a laptop in order to get anywhere near that power. And I said, my wife works in fintech. She told me that they're doing this already in Japan. And it was out there. So just because we don't have it here doesn't mean it's not possible. And like you said, that's where some great ideas can come from.
Well, you're absolutely right about Japan, because one of the first things I learned when I went to work at the U.S. Army Africa headquarters in Italy was, you know what? Everyone outside of America isn't necessarily thinking about America every minute of every day. And there's a ton of stuff that's going on out there that we don't know about, or it's on our radar, and they're just off doing their own things. And when you get into tech, South Korea, huge. You know, Japan, huge. And the miniaturization and some of these countries, you know, who don't spend as much money as we do on other things, maybe have a little money to spend on, you know, some fun stuff like some cool tech. Yeah,
exactly right. Yeah. The stuff that you don't necessarily think about, but could definitely make your day or ruin it, depending on who's using it.
Well, you're exactly right. There is so much stuff out there. All we got to do is dig it up and pay attention. And a lot of free information services you can subscribe to, some you can pay for, but man, there's just so many reports. It's easy if you just start to dig and drill down and find who's doing what out there.
Right. Yeah. And I did that when I was doing research for one of my university books about, it was a company called DevTac that created heads up displays for ballistic face masks. And the eyepieces were actually heads-up displays that could deliver real-time information. Mm. And I reached out to the person who was the contact on the website to say, hey, I'd like to feature this in the book. Do you have any information that you could share with me? I heard back from him in 15 minutes, and I think he was in Sri Lanka at the time, and he was over the moon. He told me all that I wanted to know about this stuff. And he said, yeah, it's used here and here and here. And it just opened my mind to a whole world of possibilities. So it sometimes helps to, you think these are accessible sources, but if you ask the right question, sometimes people are pretty willing to help give a writer information.
You are so on point with that. And I think it was Matthew Quirk who gave the story somewhere about or actually Brad Thor was talking about ice, because he wrote that book of, you know, Black Ice, and he's like, just talk to a scientist about, I say, I want to talk to you about ice. And they're all excited, you know, this is like, because no one wants to talk to them about their, you know, their nerd, you know, boring science, you know, stuff. And so, yeah, get this guy talking about ice or water, and they will go on for days. Yeah, you just got to strike a vein once, and all of a sudden, all the information just starts to flow.
Yeah, because you know what? The worst they can do is ignore it or tell you, no, I don't want to talk about it. But sometimes you never know. You might wind up getting a font of information that really adds to everything.
Yep.
It really does. Now, the other endeavor that you've got is the dossier, and that is really a fantastic place for readers to find more about thriller writers and just some great writing in general. Why don't you tell us a little bit more about that endeavor?
Well, thanks, Terrence. I'm looking here right now. I started the dossier. You were number 16. So yeah, the dossier. So here I am, wrote this book, and I'm having it edited. And so I'm thinking, well, what do I do next? Well, while my editor has, it's going to take him several weeks. Let's write another book. And so I did, and get that draft done. You got to let it breathe and you just kind of step away for a while. Like, well, what else can I do? Well, I went to Thriller Fest last year, and I just kind of sat back and watched everything go down, and I couldn't believe it. Everyone's super friendly. Anyone will talk to you. And I'm looking at Michael Connelly and Mark Greene and all these, Jack Carr. You can just walk up to any of them and start talking. And so I got to know some people a little bit more down, at our level, in the real world. And it just hit me. I'm going home, and I think it was on the plane. I'm like, I know what I can do now. I want to keep in touch with these people who I just met, because I really had a good time. Everyone was wonderful. So I just started. I started with Tim Hendricks. He was the first one. I met him there. We talked for a little while. We had a little bit in common in our Army service. We were both stationed at Fort Hood around with some of the same units. And so I struck up a conversation with him, and I'm like, I want to do something. So I started the writer's dossier. And what it is, it's started off with a 5-hit question interview where I just ask questions. But instead of being the typical, I don't want to say boring, but have those same canned answers to every, how do you come up with your ideas? What's your writing process? All that kind of stuff. I wanted to be different, and no disrespect to those questions, because they're good questions. That's why they get asked. But I wanted to, I wanted someone to listen or to read the questions. Like, oh, that's a different, that's an interesting one. Or I wanted the writer to say, oh, no one's ever asked me that. And so, I'm like, I'm going to come off with some really weird left field curveball questions to start. And then I'm going to add some humor into it, because I don't want to attract just people, these hardcore drill down on my favorite writer. I'm going to find out everything I can about him. I wanted everyone to find it appealing. And so I tossed in some humor. And Tim Hendricks, bless him, he was all in. And I encourage everyone to go to thewritersdossier.com and look at Tim Hendricks' responses, because his answers to those 5 questions were so wild and bizarre. It's unbelievable. And he really set the tone for the whole thing. So I started doing that with other people. I met some other people there at Thriller Fest, and I followed up with them. They're my charter group. And then I'm like, well, because, it takes a lot of time to read and research and everything. But I didn't want to just throw in out a big net. I wanted to be passionate about who it was I was interviewing. And I wanted to actually ended up promoting them, because if I found something that I really liked, I wanted everybody to get it. So I ran across Bill Schweigert's book, and I couldn't believe it. I'm like, this is fantastic. I got to do something with this. And that just happened. Ilana Barry's book, Peacock and the Sparrow, and I know you've talked to her.
Oh God, she's wonderful, isn't she?
Oh yeah. So yeah, and so we cross paths, and I hear great writers on your show, and their books. I'm like, oh, I gotta get in on that, you know. And so then I want to promote these people. So in the meantime, I built a graphic, and it just kind of, oh, wait, let's make it like a classified document. So it's like this little, get their picture. Oh, it looks like a top secret document. There's some little fun things about them. And then that directs them to the website where you can actually really drill down and read some answers to their questions. And one of the biggest hits I've ever had was this week, actually, Sean Cosby. Recognize S.A. Cosby. His books have always been phenomenal. You know, Blacktop Wasteland, Razorblade Tears, and recently All Sinners Bleed. Put his out there because people want to know what's the secret sauce, what's the silver bullet, or they just want to know what's that guy like, because they're seeing Sean Cosby on TV now. I mean, he's on Jimmy Fallon recently, or Daily Show, yes, or something. Just crazy. Yeah. He's on President Obama's twice is his reading list, doing all this stuff. And so, hey, let's find out about him. So 99.99% of the people that I've contacted have said, yeah, I'll do the dossier. There's one I think I've done 62 dossiers. I've got others in the works. One said no. It was at the very beginning, and it was crushing, because I'm like, I thought he was really, so,
right.
But to get Cosby in there and just to see, get his take. And I met him too last year, and holy cow, that dude, he's one of the most friendly and a comedy and just kind, but he's fun.
He is.
You ever have the chance, go out, make the effort, go to the other hotel or the other club or the bar or whatever, and get on it, because he's gonna give you a good time.
Yeah, he's been great. He and I were in the first relaunched issue of Thuglit together that Todd Robinson did several years ago, and he's been really good for a long time, and it really did my heart good to see someone who's put in the effort and put in the time finally get recognized for his talent, because he was one of those people that has toiled for a long time, and I'm glad he's finally made it.
Well, that's the thing that I've found out about getting to know so many of these writers, is that, oh yeah, I'm on my third book. I was talking to Nick Petrie in Chicago a couple months ago, and we were just sitting there, and he just got really chatty, and so I shut up. And he told me right off the bat, is like, yeah, before The Drifter, he had written three other books. It's not a secret. You know, he tells people this. That's just what goes into it. You know, the whole 10,000 hours or whatever. It's amazing. Yeah, they all have been working their ass off for years. And, you know, so eventually it's going to pay off if you stick with it and the timing's right.
Yeah. And it'll pay off in different ways. I mean, even if you don't get that landmark deal where you can retire and buy an island and a Ferrari and a yacht, it's always good for writers and artists in general to have a defined set of goals that they want to achieve. And how quickly, when we do finally get published, we move past that huge milestone for what it is, and then move on to the next one. Well, I want to be a bestseller, I want to get a review in the New York Times or something along those lines. And it always helps to have a focus. And I find that a lot of the writers who are in this space, who used to be in the military, always have that focus. They'll always say, all right, I achieved this one objective and I'm moving past it, but that doesn't diminish that objective that I achieved anymore.
Yep. Right on.
Yeah. That's important to keep in mind. And the other thing, the reason why I really wanted to have you on here was because you're the example of somebody who wrote something, but you didn't allow the analysis paralysis to creep in and say, all right, I'm waiting on this. I'm really putting all my energy into making this happen. You moved. And I remember Tim Kennedy, who's been on a bunch of different documentaries and shows, and I think he was a Green Beret, if I'm not mistaken, but he always said that the one thing when you're going for any objective that's deadly is to stop moving, and you have to keep moving toward whatever your objective is. And that's what's impressed me about you, is that you still want to be a published author, you've still got this great idea, but you didn't let love of that hold you up from looking for other ways to explore and to expand. And that's very admirable.
Well, thanks, Terrence. I really appreciate that, because I do put a lot of effort in the dossier. I write questions. Mm-hmm. I sat down to write questions today and it just wasn't happening. I got this great guy who's going to do a dossier with me. And it wasn't clicking. And I'm like, I'm not going to do just crap questions. So I moved on to something else. But even with the dossier, I had so many requests. And you know, like I do a lot of other stuff too.
Right.
I got the idea. Yeah, you said keep moving, keep thinking, keep creating. So I created another bucket called the dossier watch list. Because as you know, there are a lot of good people out there who have been working really hard for a long time, and they've had some short stories published. They may have done some things on their own. They maybe some of them have agents, and so maybe some of them are on subs or whatever. They've been in anthologies, whatever, but they just haven't quite hit. There's a ton of those out there who are really good. They've won awards. Like, you know, you were at Killer Nashville. A lot of people down there, you know, waiting for that deal, waiting for that, you know, for that sale. And they've put out some great stuff too. Let's put them in the watch list. And so I created a watch list for those people, because they're the next ones who are going to be published, and they're going to end up with a real dossier sometime. And then I'm like, oh, what else can I do? I just got to keep putting stuff out on social media. So I did the dossier endorsement, I did the dossier replay. So yeah, it's been a lot of fun, but I appreciate you recognizing the effort. And I love pushing stuff out, because like I said, I don't just shoot out questions and then never hear back from any of these people. We're in touch all the time. There's talk of me starting a podcast with some of these people. There's talk of a writer's group. So we all keep in touch, and it's fantastic. And I keep promoting every time I can, anything good that happens or anything new, like Tim Hendricks, his book's coming out in paperback. That's great. Alana Berry's Peacock and the Sparrow just got an Edgar nomination. So, you know, push that back out. Celebrating the stuff. Eli Craner has a new book coming out. Broiler, so much going on. Andrews Wilson. Oh man, I just finished. War Machine, Sons of Valor 3. I mean, this so much good stuff out there. Jack Stewart. Jack has Outlaw coming out soon, and Bogey Spades is already scheduled for release in November. I mean, the dude is just knocking it out, and with, you know, his characters, you know, with Colt and Punky, this is just so much fun, and I just love being a part of it.
Right, yeah, and you are part of it. You know, you're part of their journey, and you're helping them get their message out to new people, and it's always you're part of the journey with them.
Yeah, well, you're a part of it too. Like I said, you were number 16.
And I was honored to be that too. Yeah, and you do craft all of your questions specifically to everybody who's on. You do not have a canned group of questions that you send out. You put effort into every single edition, and it shows. That's why it's successful.
Thanks, Terrence.
Oh, of course, pal, of course. Now, I know you've got a lot going on. We talked about the dossier. What's the best way that people can track not only the dossier and follow what you're doing on social media, but also for yourself and your career as you're moving forward into getting published?
Yeah, thanks. JeffCircle.com is the landing pad for everything. I have a URL that will also go there, and it will go straight to the dossier entries, which I redesigned the website a couple months ago. And I think it looks fantastic. Taught myself HTML back in 2001, but yeah, thewritersdossier.com will take you right to those. It redirects to a Jeff Circle page, but you'll find out about my background, my sordid past of having been a cop and a federal investigator and moving to a Caribbean island to work on a dive boat for a former Navy guy, just a lot of crazy stuff. And then a synopsis on one of the books is on the website, but right now I'm really focusing on thewritersdossier.com.
That's important. Yeah, no, that's fantastic. Well, buddy, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us about your burgeoning career, and also for the writer's dossier. I know my audience learned a lot by hearing you.
Terrence, thanks so much. And I will continue to push out your dossier and everyone else's on X and Instagram, Facebook, and Threads.
Fantastic. Thanks you so much, pal. Really appreciate it. And thank you, my audience, for tuning in for yet another edition of Spies, Lies, and Private Eyes right here on the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network. Take care, everyone. We'll see you next time.
You have been listening to Spies, Lies, and Private Eyes with host Terrence McCauley on Authors on the Air Global Radio Network.